Spandex listeners, I hope you're all ready for this one. This is the podcast to podcast all podcasts because...
Just medicated.
Because
that's the name of the pod.
If you haven't noticed, Dave Caron is back. And we're going to talk Brazil. We're going to make him talk Neymar. We're going to make him speak in a Brazilian accent, maybe. And Adam is going to somehow convince himself and maybe the rest of us that Chile still have a shot. And Simon and I are going to fight it out over this Colombia-Uruguay tie. And that's what's going to happen. Somehow we're going to get to the rest of the qualifiers that were played, and we're going to still end friends. So, men, are you ready for this one? I think the most burning question is,
are you ready for this one, Jesse?
I'm ready. I'm ready maybe for bits and pieces. I'm ready for Brazil. I'm very excited to hear what you have to say. I'm excited for you to realize that if you're already realized that Neymar was not as necessary. I feel like you're sitting there in your no Neymar jersey with your anti-Neymar flag and your I don't want you anymore scarf.
Well, I wanted a Coutinho 10 shirt, but I haven't got the nerve to do it yet.
Everybody, Dave Caron has run Neymar out of Brazil.
for fear of being lynched, it's my ambition someday to get that shirt done just to see the reaction on the street.
Who is this Dave Caron we've got on the South American football show?
New and improved.
Dave, welcome. We're so glad you're joining us from Brazil.
I'm very glad to be here. It's been too long since I chatted to you guys. I've been too busy with other podcasts doing on WFI. I'm so delighted to be back.
I'm just feeling a little left out.
Yes, indeed. I don't get invited. I edit everybody's pods. Nobody bloody invites me anymore. I'll have to invite myself.
Adam, I blame you. Invite Dave all the time. Dave, you have a standing invitation to join us on our pad whenever you like.
But Neymar's going to be back soon, so you better wipe me.
Oh, man. And Adam, you got sick, obviously, from watching Chile lose. Do you feel better now that they've won?
I'm feeling a lot more perky now than I was. Yeah, so I'll try and make sense in this pod, but if I'm talking a load of rubbish, then that's probably because I've barely eaten for 2 days, so forgive me.
Aww. All right, we'll get you some toast when we're all done. Simon, I don't know how we're going to be able to do this peacefully. However, right now, before we begin our duel, welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
Simon, for today, I think you should be an England fan.
No, I'd rather be a Colombian fan. Don't make me think about England.
You and I will talk about Wayne Rooney. That's what'll happen.
Let's not. Let's not go there.
Yeah, Captain Jordan Henderson. That's what, just fix your mind on that. Guys, let's start neutrally. Should we start with Bolivia and Ecuador and the altitude issues and are Valencia not leaving the field in a helicopter or through the Batcave this time?
His Lazarus moment, he rose from the dead. He rose from a stretcher to score two.
Well, yeah, it was a game that featured two of South America's most wanted men who both were racist in the game.
My brother walked in when I was watching this game. I was watching at my parents' house, and my brother is a huge fan of Narcos, which we were just talking about. My brother happened to walk in when Pablo Escobar scored his second and said, "Wait a second, are you watching Narcos?" I said, No, I'm watching Bolivia versus Ecuador, and this is not that Pablo Escobar. So not the Mexican drug lord Pablo Escobar, but Bolivia's Pablo Escobar scored two. Had hopes that Bolivia would knock Ecuador from their perch. We had altitude on our sides. Did you guys have any thoughts about Bolivia's first half?
Bolivia were excellent in the first half, as well as Bolivia played. Ecuador were dreadful in that half. They reminded me of how bad Chile were against Ecuador the other day. But it was an impressive fight back from Ecuador in the second half. But I think that Bolivia will be kicking themselves for not winning this one, because that 2-1, they had a couple of chances to finish Ecuador off, didn't take them, and then Ener Valencia got his second in, I think it was about the last minute, wasn't it, to cancel out those two goals by the wonderfully named Pablo Escobar, we've already talked about. That Pablo Escobar was actually born in Paraguay as well, although he plays for Bolivia. He was born in Paraguay.
In where, Adam?
In Paraguay, I think I was about to say.
Adam is now medicated as well.
This is a problem when you have no fuel.
We've seen a lot of these games that have sort of been like tales of two halves. Bolivia definitely dominating in the first half. What happened? What happened, Simon Edwards?
Well, Pablo Escobar, Paraguayan, Bolivian Pablo Escobar scored some really nice goals. Two very, very good goals. The first goal, 3 minutes in, just an excellent goal. Second goal as well, a nice dribble and a nice goal. The altitude is always a big issue. I think perhaps kind of the shock, and having played a few days before, it makes it a little more difficult to plan how to acclimatize that for Ecuador. But yeah, I mean, obviously Ecuador as well isn't the biggest change. They have certain, you know, altitude as well. But I think that may have been an issue. But yeah, I mean, Bolivia have been quite impressive recently, playing some decent stuff. Obviously, they're always better, a lot better at home. But they've got some good players. And yeah, it was a couple of spectacular moments by Pablo Escobar. You know, a good amount of possession. And yeah, they deserve their lead. And I think Ecuador, especially Ecuador going down to 10 men before they equalised. Yeah, very disappointing for Bolivia not to capitalise on the good moment, the good position they were in.
Well, I think this will very much feel like 2 points dropped for Ecuador if you look at how they usually do in La Paz in previous World Cup qualifying campaigns, because I think on their last four visits to La Paz, they had got all 3 points. Oh, their last three visits, I think it was, actually. They've got all 3 points. So, yeah, this is kind of 2 points drop, but as they were two goals down, some Ecuadorians might see it as a point gained. I think we'll be able to tell at the end of the qualifying series, really, how valuable that point was.
Dave, were you surprised watching this game? Were you surprised by this Bolivia, considering the Bolivia that had been so handily routed by Brazil?
Yeah, they certainly looked a different proposition. And, you know, the guys mentioned it there, because my main point was, I think, you know, it's the two South American nations that play at altitude. So I think Ecuador are probably the best equipped to go to Bolivia to that altitude. It's not really that much of a difference for them. But, you know, it's just a good old South American World Cup qualifier. You know, four goals, plenty of action. As the guys have said, some great goals. And, you know, these qualifiers, when you base them against what we're seeing in Europe, like, South America stands apart. It really does. It's exciting football, and you do have all those elements. It's like, you know, we do the Libertadores pod and you know, the altitude and the madness. Well, we'd even a power cut in the Brazilian game we'll come to. You know, all of these things that factor in. It's just Bolivia, I think, getting back to your question, I think they'll be really gutted at not getting the 3 points. You know, I don't think there's many teams in South America who go 2-0 down there and get their way back into it again. I think Ecuador will be very happy with the point. Maybe they'll be disappointed, as I say, in the first half in conceding the goals and so on. But on saying that, they're looking good at the minute. Ecuador are a handy outfit, and I've been really, really impressed with them. I haven't been on this show in a while, and I haven't really got to talk with them about them. But, you know, I've been really impressed with them, and I just see them, you know, getting in the top four anyway, and actually going to the World Cup. I think that they are good enough.
From a Chile's perspective, I actually feel like Ecuador are the team that Chile can chase down.
I totally get where you're coming from, Adam.
The main reason for that is I think they're quite weak on the road, and they've got more away games left than they have home games.
Oh, now you're just trying to make me feel better, because they come to us next month.
Yeah.
Thanks, Adam. Also,
they've got Uruguay next up, and they're going to be without their two first-choice central defenders, I think, for that one, because they're suspended. That's going to be a pretty tough one. Yeah, and their manager, Gustavo Quinteros, I don't rate him at all. I spoke about this a bit on the last pod. I think he's made so many poor decisions this year. And from the position that Ecuador got themselves in last year, you know, they won 4 out of 4, and they came into 2016 top of the South American qualifying group. They've kind of gradually slipped down, and they're starting to look more and more precarious to me. They got that great win over Chile the other day, obviously, but you know, Chile didn't turn up for that. But
do you not feel that that's a factor in it, Adam? You know, like Ecuador at the moment seem to have the head of steam going, and that can count for a lot. You know, you say Chile have the opportunity to get them. Chile are just at the minute a bit patchy on it.
I'm not sure that they do. I think their only real decent result this year Ecuador have got is the one against Chile. Like I say, I think the 3-0 win over Chile might actually prove a bit of a blessing in disguise for Chile, because I think it might keep Quinteros in a job, and I think he might be the downfall for Ecuador.
But this is an Ecuador team that shows that they can come back. You know, that's no easy feat. We've seen teams give up after down 1-0.
I think Ecuador, I mean, in a incredibly unpredictable South American qualifiers, they're particularly unpredictable. And I think I don't know where they're going to end up. I think they're one of the teams that could get some good results, could give away some disappointing goals and get some bad results. I think while the teams around them, Colombia, Argentina, maybe not so much, Paraguay are more consistent, have a more of a game plan, know what they're doing. I think Ecuador are very explosive and pacey out wide, and they get, you know, they score some good goals. When it clicks, it's great. But I think they're less. Their games seem a little less controlled, little less. Again, it may come down to the manager being the issue. They seem to have less of a game plan that they execute particularly well, and it's more a result of, you know, excellent individual play, direct dribbling, and you know, pace, and you know, explosive football that when it comes together and works, gets them these good results. Is, you know, against Chile. But I think there will be certain games where it doesn't click, and I think they'll drop some bad points, as may be the case with the game against Bolivia.
This will be an interesting one for Simon. So their previous manager, or the manager for their last qualifying campaign, Ronaldo Arruda, the guy who led Atlético Nacional to the Copa Libertadores this year, I thought his management of Ecuador in the last set of World Cup qualifiers was excellent. I just see consistent mistakes from Gustavo Quinteros. That's all I'm going to say. Maybe he's going to prove me wrong, I don't know. But we'll come on to Chile later, and Chile have got managerial issues as well.
I love talking about Chile's issues, Adam. Sorry, Chilean fans, only because I like getting on Adam's case. Guys, let's quickly talk about this newer, to some, of well, different kind of rule than in Europe, that these players don't have 3 strikes before they're suspended. We get 2 yellow cards before we get a suspension. So we are collectively going to be missing a lot of players going into the next round. So Adam, you mentioned Ecuador is without 2 strikers going into the game against
2 defenders.
Uruguay. You said defenders, and I just meant to test you by saying strikers, and you passed. Well done. Thank you. Bolivia, I think, and any of you can just jump right in and correct me, is okay. Yes, I will take silence as a yes. World Football Index listeners, never take anything I say as fact. Feel free to tweet and respond whenever I say anything wrong, but do it nicely because I'm fragile. So as we go through these games, let's sort of check in and see where we're at going into these next games. And Simon, the next game is ours. Do you need a cup of tea? Do you need tissues? Do you need ice cream? Are you ready? Are you okay?
I'm ready. I'm okay. Yeah, I'm okay.
Oh my God, I'm not okay. All right. Simon, let's just talk pregame for a second, in which almost an entire stadium full of people in Barranquilla were holding white handkerchiefs for the peace process, which I thought was really moving to see visually.
Yeah, no, it's nice, and it's obviously a big issue in Colombia at the moment. The disappointing thing was the low turnout, but it's a very, you know, important issue that people are very divided on. It's very much divided in the country between the yes and the no vote to agree the peace deal. the no's won, but I think there's a general sense from both the yes and the no camp that they want a resolution. The no's obviously want a different kind of resolution, and hopefully the ceasefire will continue with between the government and the Marxist guerrilla group FARC. And hopefully they can get a resolution. The FARC is still keen to continue negotiating. So hopefully this can, you know, produce some results, and the agreement can eventually be signed. And yeah, it was nice to see that that people are coming to the streets and using these big events to show their willingness to continue in that process and look to get a resolution.
I think considering the political history of football stadiums in South America, it was really powerful to see that being used for something peaceful and active. It was really nice. My men who use the metric system, how many is 33 degrees Celsius in Fahrenheit for our metric challenged listeners, including myself?
91.4.
What?
Double it and add 30. Times 2 plus 30.
Yeah. Google says 91.4 exactly.
Yeah. It was really flipping hot in Barranquilla. The players were already sweating when they came out of the tunnel. I was a little worried.
Yeah, that's what Colombia were going for. That's why we play our game so early.
Yeah. Really hot. However, then the rain kicked in. Simon, worried? Not worried?
Well, I think the rain played a huge part in the game and disrupting Colombian game plan. They brought back Magnelli Torres, return of the Mac, once again, like the song. They brought Magnelli Torres back into the midfield. Abel Gaviria kept his place, and that was a clear indication that Colombia wanted to play the game in Uruguay's half, keep the ball and try and work things with a lot of possession, which is a good idea, especially when you combine that with the sweltering heat. It was never going to be an end-to-end game, so Colombia set their stall out to camp in the opposition half and try and work the goal by passing the ball. Magnelli Torres is not particularly quick, not particularly strong, not particularly good in defence, but he's incredible at making those through balls and those, you know, setting the tone in a Valderrama-esque way. He's not in Valderrama's league, but he's very good at passing. So that was clearly the main focus for Colombia. And yeah, it was going quite well. It was coming together quite well. And then the rains came and it became one of those, I don't know, I always think of Uruguay playing in the rain, kind of battling. And that's kind of the vision I have. And that's kind of what happened. The rain really disrupted some of that passing game. And it kind of made McNally's role much more limited than it would have been usually with the drier pitch. But Colombia took the lead. Abel leapt like an aguila. Ah, wait, aguilas don't leap. Oh, I've ruined that one.
Sword.
Yes, he sawed.
Maybe they have an injured talon, and they leap. Uh-huh.
But they're not well known for their jumping. Anyway,
just, you know, very just lesser known leaping eagles.
So Aguila scored a header, and it was all going well. And then it started raining, and Uruguay got back into it. Second half, Uruguay were really strong defensively, holding their own.
Don't rush me. Hold on.
Sorry, go. Go ahead. Sorry.
I'm about to say something nice about your team. Don't rush me through that.
Oh, thanks. Go ahead.
Yeah. No, that was in a really phenomenal, not only because our defense showed just ridiculous holes that need to be patched up, and I'm incredibly worried about Coates, who is 9'7", plays like a three-footer, and is forcing Cavani to go and defend, which is really stupid. That's not the nice thing I was going to say about your team. Here it comes. You could clearly tell that you guys have been working on set pieces. The goal off the corner was spotless. And Aguilar was out of the squad at Toulouse with a torn ACL, I think was it a full year or almost a year?
Yeah, a long time. And he was a surprise inclusion. He came back and was playing okay for a kind of underachieving good Deportivo Cali team, so it was a big surprise that he was given the nod in the squad, and then he's played the last two games. But he's a good technical player, good passer. What was Cavani doing? Was that a foul? Did you see on the header he threw himself to the ground?
Cavani threw himself to the ground. He was ridiculous in that one. I think that the issue for me with Cavani that we will not have him for the next game because he protested and got a yellow card. However, when you look back, he's actually correct. He was kicked. It was a pretty obvious kick. It should have been called a foul, and he protested, which was dumb. Edinson, you know, if you protest, it's going to be a yellow card. You know, if you get a yellow card, we are not going to have you for the next game. Yes, he was right. No, don't protest. So, okay. Issue. And I think we suffered for Cavani having to go back and defend. We did not have Loledo in this game, and there was no one really making those really important connections in the midfield. Dave, you and I had spoken about Sanchez. I love Carlos Sanchez. We cannot rely just on Carlos Sanchez. There's no one playing with Sanchez in the midfield. We are lost. So I'm hoping that Loledo comes back and we can use him with Cebolla Rodriguez, who had my favorite Uruguayan moment of all time. He also had a great header, headed the goal in, got hurt, head is bleeding. They wrap him up with an ace bandage. It immediately starts to come undone, and he just tucked it back in and kept going. It is so, that is Uruguayan medicine at its best. Wrap my head wound with an ace bandage, and I will tuck it in next to my ear like a headband. It was phenomenal.
You mentioned Sanchez there. I know, Jesse, you and I love him. You know, I've seen him a couple of times live, and he's one of those types of player. You know, he'll catch your eye on the television screen, but you see what, if you concentrate on him or you pay a bit of attention to him live, you really appreciate what he brings. He's just a joy to watch. You know, he's one you would describe as a late developer. And, you know, Adam, I know you would remember him from the Libertadores and so on. I think that he could still do a job in Europe. What would your thoughts be?
We kind of covered this a little bit last week on the pod, talking about Sanchez. I just think, Europe might have just come a little bit too late for him. You know, for the player and for Uruguay, I think it's just best to keep him as he is at the moment. In Mexico, he seems to be doing fine there. He's probably earning a pretty good living. You know, Mexican clubs pay pretty well. Anyway, I don't think it's worth the risk of moving to Europe for him. I'm not sure at this stage of his career. He's 31 now. I just don't know what he's got to gain from that, really. And who's going to take a risk on a 31-year-old who's never played in Europe before?
Some people's lives are just beginning at 31, Adam. Some people may or may not live.
I'm 32, but...
Some people need a little reassurance that they're still okay.
I'm 32. I'm not a professional footballer looking for a move to Europe, so...
You know, to me, he in the 2015 Libertadores, he was the standout player in that River Plate side. I just thought he was excellent. And I'll say I've seen him live a couple of times. You know, I saw him in the World Cup, and I saw him here again in March. And I just thought the guy, when you see him in a live situation, you know, you see so much more of a player in that way. And I've always thought to myself, the European clubs maybe missed a trick with this guy, because I just rate him that highly.
I happen to think, and you guys can disagree with me, but I think two of our best players this whole qualifying season so far have been Sanchez and Arévalo Ríos, who is, in footballing terms, 907. He also is playing in Mexico. I believe he's 34 now. I'll look that up to make sure I'm not lying to you. But both of them are so solid that you just know that you can count on them. There are not going to be holes where they play. So I think we're a lot better for having these sort of stalwarts on the pitch for us. Who wants to say something lovely about my little
guy? You really know how to call a conversation.
I know, right? All right, let's let Simon talk about Colombia a little more. Listen. So, Simon, we are going to be missing, as I said, Cavani, but also, I'm just going to make myself sad. So, Gaston Silva comes out with probably what looks like a hamstring injury. He pulled up. Palito Pereira comes on and gets a yellow card. So, we don't have either one. I am sitting here shaking in my slippers that we're not going to have anybody left, really, on the bench against Ecuador. Simon, are you guys going to be missing anybody going into your next match?
Yeah, I mean, in terms of suspensions, Juan Cuadrado got two yellow cards in the last two games, so he's out of the next game. So that'll be a miss. That'll be a big miss. Obviously, it's important to have. We'll have Daniel Torres, who's been really good in the holding midfield role, probably playing alongside our Carlos Sanchez, who's been excellent. He's really, really important for Colombia. He's so powerful, so strong, but also really quite good in the ball. Much better than many people in England will remember from his time with Aston Villa. He's really, really important for Colombia. So, Cuadrado will be a miss. Obviously, James coming back in. Daniel Torres will be back as well. So I think Colombia overall should be stronger, but Cuadrado had a good game. Cuadrado can be very frustrating. He does kind of the same thing over and over again, but it's quite a good thing to do. So it's not always a problem. He always stands up the defender, drops the shoulder to the left and goes to the right every single time. Obviously, the defenders know what's coming, but he's so fast that he can get away with it. Would be nice if he did something else, like maybe a lateral pass occasionally. He's obviously a very good player. Carlos Bacca has been awful for Colombia recently. Obviously, he set up Cardona's goal in the last game with a really nice little 1-2, but his touch, he was making some 5-yard passes that were going over the heads of the players, his teammates. He missed another good number of chances. I think one of the issues Colombia had against Uruguay was the manager set up in a very intelligent way in terms of knowing that Colombia probably will have more possession and playing some players who can pass the ball well, such as Aguila and McNelly. But they played Murillo on the left, who needs space. He's a very direct, he's like a little ball just running at the defenders, and he needs space. So he didn't necessarily follow through with the game plan in terms of in that position. Obviously, Cardona came on in the second half and I think made a huge difference in terms of Colombia regaining some of the control of the game that they had at the beginning. They lost a little bit towards the end of the first half, but I think Cardona's introduction gave more balance to the team, had another player who can pass and move. And yeah, Cardona's a really, really good player. He's playing in Mexico at the moment, but he's got a great shot, very good technique. He's a little bit chubby. He looks a bit out of shape, but
no fat shaming on this podcast.
Nah, nothing wrong with that. But I mean, there's a reason Gordita. That he didn't start for Colombia
from earlier on.
There's there's more to love.
Yeah. True. I think that Cardona and Suarez both did and are capable of doing something that is nerve wracking as a fan, which is what Cardona did in the last game and Suarez did in this game, which is they are capable of being invisible for long stretches of time. They barely touch the ball. And then what Suarez did in this game, gets the ball, creates this unbelievable play all by himself and scores a stunning goal that Adam Brandon, don't you even think about saying that it was luck. It was unbelievable. He takes full credit and he deserves it. I really thought we had it. Oh my goodness. And then, but Jerry Mina actually did it in this game for you guys. And I will give you the fact that it was against the run of play and absolutely beautiful, that arching goal. Were you surprised that came?
Colombia obviously spent most of the game really in the Uruguay half, but yeah, it didn't look like it was necessarily going to come. I wasn't quite sure where it was going to come from. And then, yeah, Jerry Mina, an incredible header. He played the ball out wide to Cuadrado, who had moved into the fullback position. They brought on Orlando Berrio, who's from place for Nacional, has had a really good Libertadores. I think he's a player who deserves another look for Colombia. Obviously, they've had a few players missing, which is why he got in. But he's very, very powerful, and he's a good option to bring on because he just bullies the fullback with his pace and with his strength. Anyways, he came on the right wing, and Cuadrado dropped to fullback. Mina played out wide to Cuadrado. Cuadrado loops in across, and Mina's header was just amazing. Just flicked it from the edge of the box, and it just looped perfectly into the far top corner. You know, I wasn't quite sure where it was coming from. Colombia's midfield is good, but back is an issue, and the bigger issue is there's not really many good options, which is strange. In 2014, Colombia had Jackson Martinez, they had Adrian Ramos, they had Carlos Bacca, they had Falcao, they had so many good strikers. There were, you know, it was a real challenge to get into the squad. Now, when Bacca's not playing well, which has been the case for the last four games, Roger Martinez, he's playing in China, he looked a little bit off the pace when he came on.
he was a more physical presence up front, which was important, especially with Uruguay playing quite deep. You know, he had more of an impact, but his touch wasn't quite there. That's an issue. The other strikers ahead in the squad was Rafael Santos Borre, who plays in Spain. He's very young. He's not really ready to be leading the line. And that's a concern for Colombia, because the team, I think, picks itself in terms of the best 11. They have some good options in terms of changing it around, apart from in the number 9 position. And when Bacca's had such a poor game as he has recently, it's just taking a risk, really, in terms of bringing a substitution on. It's not like, okay, well, great, we'll play plan B. It's just, well, right, we'll just stick anybody else up there and see what happens. Mina may have been a better option to stick up front. He scored 4 headers in the league this year, and yeah, the way he took his goal was excellent, and he had a really good game. Oscar Murillo has been criticised a little bit for failing to prevent Suarez's goal. Obviously, Suarez is one of the most difficult players to mark in the world, but there's been a little bit of criticism that he wasn't quite strong enough at that moment, and it was perhaps a slip on his part. Jason Murillo, plays in Italy with Inter Milan, is another option. He was dropped for these 2 games. Colombia preferred the height in defence, so he may come back in. I think it'll be a bit harsh on Oscar Murillo. He's played well, but yeah, there's some good options in midfield and defence, but I think the centre-forward position is one. Maybe Falcao, maybe everything's falling into place for a Falcao return.
So you think, you think Yerry Mina is going to be a permanent fixture now for Colombia?
His performance was very well received. The header was good. His height is, you know, some Colombia historically don't always have the tallest of defenders. It's, you know, not that they have had some options, but the best defenders, thinking of Cordoba and people like that, aren't particularly tall. Jason Murillo isn't particularly tall and strong in the air. So having someone who's 1.95, playing in defense, 6'4" or 6'5".
Thank you for immediately translating that. I needed it.
That's all right. Is something that's appreciated, and he's a good player. He's tidy. He's quick. He scored that goal, so I think he's in pole position for that central defensive role, perhaps alongside one of the Murillos.
Yeah.
Either the quick, strong Murillo or the smart, tidy Murillo.
He's a World Football Index favourite. Long term listeners, certainly those who listen to the Copa Libertadores pods. We'll know the name Yerry Mina.
Yeah, I mean, he could be playing against another one of your favourites, Davinson Sanchez, as well.
Yeah,
he's doing well in Holland.
Yeah, well, I think I said on one of the Libertadores pods that I imagine in a few years, Mina and Sanchez will be Colombia's 2 centre-backs for years to come. So,
it's looking good, Oscar,
that prediction.
Yeah, definitely.
And great to see him bust out some of his dance moves again. He's
yeah, he was losing his shorts, though. Did you see that?
Yeah, I did.
That was a very Chilean Alexis Sanchez move. Speaking of Chile, look how seamless that transition was, you guys. It's like I practiced. Adam Brandon, you did not lose this week. We have so many great things to talk about. Congratulations, your boys are back. Adam, did you think that was going to be coming from Vidal, of all people? Did you think that was even going to be coming? Wait a second. Let's talk about your feelings. Did you think you were going to be happy after this game?
Well,
and where did you think the happy was going to come from?
I wasn't sure, but I did say on the last pod that, you know, if I had to put money on it, I said that Chile would probably win 2-1. And that's exactly how it turned out.
Oh my goodness, you did. We're like forecasters on World Football Index. Call us with everything you want us to guess for you.
It was a man of the match performance from Arturo Vidal, who was outstanding from start to finish, despite suffering from tonsillitis and also picking up an ankle injury in the second half. But he played through the pain, and he got both of Chile's goals. A very good header in the first half to put Chile 1-0 up, and then became the saviour in the second half with a fantastic shot from just outside the box, which went through the legs of a couple of Peruvian players and nestled into the corner of the net, and before bouncing out. I think some of the stadium thought it might have hit the post, actually. It was a kind of a strange way the ball went into the net. Anyway, yeah, he was the outstanding figure, although Another thing I mentioned on the last pod was I expected Bosayur to come in for Mena at left back, and that is how Petey went, which wasn't so much of a surprise because Bosayur has always delivered for his country. He seems to play better for Chile than he does for his club sides over the years, which is true for many Chile players, to be honest, but especially true for Bosayur. He set up the second goal. Isla set up the first goal. And Isla got heavily criticised after that Ecuador game for being out of position. But he always seems to play better in home matches. Another performance to speak about was probably the aforementioned Alexis Sanchez. Yeah, he looked notably disappointed after the game. He refused to do any interviews as he was coming off the pitch. Yeah, after an excellent Copa America Centenario in the USA, he's not had a good game for Chile since then, really. He had his moments against Peru last night, but yeah, it wasn't quite working for him. He looks a little bit short of confidence, really, in a Chile shirt, which is surprising as he's started pretty well for Arsenal this season, from what I've seen in the Premier League. And the other player I'd like to speak a little bit about is Eduardo Vargas, who looks completely shot of confidence at the moment. The famous thing about Eduardo Vargas is, you know, he doesn't usually score for his club sides or even get a game for his club sides, but as soon as he puts that red shirt on for Chile, he suddenly looks a £50 million striker. Yeah, he's looked really short on confidence in the past week. I think he needs some game time at Hoffenheim, which he's not getting at the moment. And yeah, he doesn't look particularly fit either. So that's a little bit of a worry, especially as these next two games coming up in November, Chile have got Colombia away and Uruguay at home.
Simon and I are going to be so mean to you when that happens. Just a warning. Put that on the calendar.
Well, I would expect nothing less. I'm hoping that players like Sanchez and Vargas will suddenly come alive next month and get back to their best. But a lot's going to depend on Pete's management as well.
So Adam, in the last pod,
yeah,
you were a little conflicted because, you know, obviously you want Chile to win, but there was this sense, and I heard this from a couple of Chileans and Chilean fans, that maybe if Chile went down against Peru, Pete would leave either of his own volition or get fired. Fresh heart, fresh blood would come in and you guys would have like a new lease on life. So is this in any way a disappointment, this win?
No, I think how it came about in the end, especially, I think you can only take positives from it. Incredibly, PC actually offered his resignation after the match, but the Chilean FA rejected it.
And why do you think he offered his resignation after a win?
Well, because he got heavily slammed here in Chile after that Ecuador match. You know, it was an unacceptable performance. And what a lot of journalists and a lot of Chileans are seeing here and why he gets criticised so much is that Chile don't seem to go into these games under him, these World Cup qualifiers, prepared. And we saw that at the start of Copa America Centenario as well. And it was really only after a couple of weeks that Chile got going in that competition. So it feels like if he has more time to work with the players, yeah, he can do a decent job. But he seems to struggle to get his ideas across, what he wants in a game in that short period. You know, you've only got maybe 2-3 days with your players to prepare them for each individual game in qualifying. And I think he's a better manager when he has a whole week to prepare his side. I think that's possibly proving the difference here. And that's why we've seen such a big difference between how Chile performed in those knockout stages in the Copa America, where between each game he had like a whole week to prepare for that fixture. Where in these World Cup qualifiers, you know, he's only got a very short turnaround. And maybe that's reflective of he's only got experience in club management before taking this job.
Interesting. And okay, I'm doubling up on this question for you. Tell me about who you're missing, if anyone, and against Uruguay, please let it be the entire 11, plus anyone sitting on the bench and anyone else important. So there's your number one question.
Well,
but I want to. No, sorry, Adam, I'll just
quickly answer that, because nobody at the moment, because Gary Medel, he will miss, good news for Simon, he will miss the Columbia game. That's going to be the end of his free match suspension. But he's back for Uruguay. So at the moment, there's no key players missing. But I think there's quite a few players on yellow cards going into that Columbia away match. So if they pick up a yellow, then they will miss the Uruguay match. So,
all right, Simon, you know. See what you guys can do, okay?
Okay, we'll try. I mean, Cuadrado would have won a load of fouls. Definitely got some yellow cards, but he's not playing, I'm afraid. Uh-huh. So.
Yeah, maybe we'll work on that. Part two, Adam Brandon, is a couple weeks ago, we had a very long very interesting conversation about this Chilean defense. Have you seen any difference since then that makes you feel any better about where the team is going defense-wise?
Well, as I already mentioned, it's definitely vital that PC picks Botellur ahead of Mena on the left of the defense. That's going to be key. And Medel coming back in the center of defense will help. As for the two center backs who played against Peru, I felt that Enzo Rocco dealt with Guerrero. I thought Guerrero was pretty pathetic most of the night, to be honest. He certainly didn't live up to his surname at all. Seemed more interesting.
Oh, Guerrero, okay.
Yeah, he seemed more interested in theatrics than actually playing the match. Peru were very disappointing for the first half, especially. But they did seem to improve as the game went on.
Any thoughts on Bravo? Either one of you? Any one of you?
He looks like he's struggling a little bit at the moment, confidence-wise. He didn't really make a mistake against Peru, though. I thought he had a solid game. I thought he had a pretty solid game last night. I do think that the criticism he's getting in the Premier League, and most Chileans think this, is completely over the top. And a lot of people here just don't even see some of the points that people are making.
In the last game when he came out of his goal. I mean, he's playing. It's a lack of confidence. He's just not playing with the kind of confidence that inspires confidence. I mean, Simon, jump in. You watch him in the Premier League. We talked about this on our EPL pod. Agree, disagree. This does not seem to be the same Claudio Bravo that we are used to watching either in the last Copa America or at Barcelona.
Obviously, there's adjustments to the Premier League. And I think as well, I think he is trying to, all of the narrative surrounding his transfer is he's the guy who can play with his feet. And I think there is a certain pressure to prove that, to prove I am an upgrade on Joe Hart with my feet, with my distribution. So perhaps he's feeling the pressure of that. And, you know, combined with the change in league and change in culture and, you know, the whole
lifestyle. Do you think that's affecting him in Chile? Is that just sort of translating everywhere?
No, I think there's pressure again. I think some of the criticism has been harsh, but I think having to deal with that criticism whereby previously he's, you know, been, you know, well respected and well regarded and pretty comfortable, having to deal with that additional pressure. And I think, I think some of the criticism has been harsh, so it's difficult to deal with that. So perhaps that's affecting his overall game and his overall mindset, both for Manchester City and also back in Chile in the international games.
Yeah, I just think that his role in general and Guardiola's tactic with playing that kind of keeper is just not understood very well by a lot of football fans. Yeah, I think there's too much focus on it at the moment. I think they're looking for any excuse to sort of say, this is a keeper who's replaced England's number one. And he's not even that good. Look, he makes mistakes too. That kind of attitude. Yeah, of course he makes mistakes, and he might make the same amount of mistakes as, say, Joe Hart made last year. That's not the point. You know, Guardiola's got him in the team because he suits Guardiola's style. Just repeating myself, it's over the top for me. I think some of the criticism is a mix of ignorance and perhaps a little bit of jingoism on the side of some English people as well.
Well, speaking of negative adjectives, let's talk about Argentina. And I only mean that about this game that they just played against Paraguay. So hold your horses, Argentinian fans, and hold your negative tweets, because this was just purely about the game. Whoa, show of hands. And by hands, I mean, please tell me vocally, because I can't see your hands, people. How surprised were you guys about this result? This is one result. Apparently, I'm still surprised because I'm slurring my words. Dave, shock?
Because Paraguay is anything a shock, Jesse? You know, they're the perennial party poopers for everybody. And if anyone's capable of getting a result, it's Paraguay.
Argentina, a loss, a party pooper, really? Or were you a little bit secretly excited?
No, well, you see, there's this rivalry between Brazil and Argentina that is quite bizarre. And I've said this in a few times on pods. The Argentinians have a football rivalry. Brazilians have just a rivalry about everything with Argentina. It goes deep into the culture. And where I live, there's quite a lot of Argentinians. Most of the restaurants and bars here are Argentinian-owned. And the rivalry doesn't seem to run as deep. Maybe it's because the Argentinians are in Brazil. But I've been in Argentina as well and spoken to Argentinian people. And it doesn't seem to run, the blood doesn't seem to run as deep as it does in Brazilian, or with Brazilians and their sort of hatred of all things Argentinian. But back to the game, you know, I'm delighted to see Paraguay win. You know, again, anybody who listens to me in these pods knows I have a soft spot for them. I just love the fact that they just never know when they're beaten, and the way they set themselves up, they're just so durable. It wasn't a shock. They deserved these points. They really did deserve it over the course of 90 minutes. They deserved.
I think that was part of the shock, was not that, you know, you get these comments after, did Paraguay win or did Argentina lose? And I think that takes away from the fact that Paraguay really, as you said, deserved this win. They played really well, no?
Yeah, from 1 to 11, and number one especially, with the penalty save. It's what Paraguay do. They come to spoil your party. They are a very, very good, well-set-up team. They play for each other. They don't have what you would class as world superstars, but what they have work together very, very efficiently, and they play for each other. And that's why, you know, I do have the soft spot for them. They would be my second team down here. And I do love the fact that they don't have really much care for reputation or anything. They'll go and they'll play their game. They'll hit you on the counter. And that's what they did. And they played, to me, just a Paraguayan game. And they got a typically Paraguayan result.
Guys, let's talk about Kun Agüero, who is great at a lot of things, but in the last few months, not so great at taking penalties. Adam, Daniel Hernandez, Paraguay's goalie, saved Agüero's penalty.
It was Justa Villa
who saved it. All right, I'm just getting things all confused. I'm going to ask you a question.
I know that because he plays for Chilean's biggest club here in Chile, Colo-Colo.
Colo-Colo, so does he?
Yeah, so that was quite big news here in Chile, you know, an Argentinian missing a penalty against a player who plays his football in Chile.
Look, we're all excited about this.
I didn't see this game. I watched extended highlights this morning, but yeah, I didn't see it because it clashed with the Chile game, unfortunately. But yeah, from what I saw, yeah. Kind of what Dave said, really. I think that Chiqui Arce, the Paraguayan manager, has got Paraguay. He set them up well for that game last night. He looked to use Paraguay's pacey wingers against Argentina's pretty slow fullbacks, and that is probably the best way to beat Argentina at the moment. And that's how their goal came about as well on the counter. Fantastic result for Paraguay, and not hugely surprising in some ways. Because, you know, Argentina without Messi are dreadful, as we're seeing. So yeah, in this World Cup qualifying campaign, they've won three out of three with Messi. And I think they've only won one without him. So it's.
And I'm suggesting they're better without them last year, Adam, or earlier on in the year.
I won't remind you of your.
no, I'll do it myself. Harm
your
the air, yeah.
Of your infamous prediction. <Yeah.
laughs> I think I was drinking that day, but sure.
This makes three matches without a win, though, for Argentina, who are still in fifth place. So they're still in playoff playing spot as it is now, but what does this mean for an Argentina that's, I get, are we saying they're in transition? What sort of euphemism can we give them here? Like, where do they go here? Is this all to do with missing Messi?
Well, their next two games are huge, aren't they? So they're definitely going to need to get Messi back
Dave,
for that.
What do you say? They're coming to you.
They've got Brazil. They've got Brazil away. Where's that being played in Brazil? Do you know, Dave?
I think it might be Belo Horizonte.
Horizonte. Yeah, it is. Yeah. It is Belo Horizonte.
The scene of the 7-1, that could be ironic.
So they've got that, and then I believe they have Colombia at home, right, Simon?
Yeah, Colombia at home in San Juan.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the game that you're unluckily going to be in Argentina.
I'll be in Argentina, but I'll be in Buenos Aires.
Yeah, so those two games are really tough, you know, two of the toughest games you could possibly have at the moment in South America. So, and if Bowser doesn't win one of those, he could be gone already.
They might have Messi back for Colombia, but do you count on that? I mean, in the meantime, you have to build a team that can win without, you're not one player. That's not working for them. So what do you guys see happening here? Do they call up younger players?
But look, what they put out on the pitch last night really and truly should have taken care of Paraguay. There is no shortage of talent. There's no shortage of great players that Argentina can call on. So we have to ask the question, is it down to how they're being set up? Is it being down to poor management? Or is there something deeper in there? Is there a problem without Messi being the glue for all of this? There's a lot of questions that it begs. Certainly Argentina sitting fifth in this qualifying group. And as you rightly say, I'll come on to it when we talk about Brazil next or when we move forward. But, they could be looking down the barrel of, you know, six games to go and struggling to qualify if those results go the wrong way in the next two. And they just shouldn't be, in my opinion. There's something wrong with Argentina. And I know Dan Edwards is meant to be on the pod tonight, and I'd love to have heard what you know, he had to say about it, because I just can't quite put my finger on it. Maybe Simon or Adam might know a little bit more, but I just can't get it.
If you look at the striking talent they have, to not be able to score against Paraguay at home, and Paraguay are organised and they'll work hard and they're a decent team, but to have Higuain, Di Maria, Aguero, Gaitán, Lamela, Dybala, Correa to choose from and not be able to score a goal, obviously missing the penalty is a thing, but you would think with their defence would be the weakest area and that they would score goals. You know, still playing Demichelis in defence is a concern. But with all that striking talent, if they can't put those seven or eight excellent world-class attacking players in a formation that scores goals, then there's an issue. And it's not as if it was a particularly conservative formation that they played. They had Higuain, Di Maria, Aguero and Gaitán starting. And there has to be an issue in terms of tactics and strategy if those quality of players can't score more regularly. You would think maybe they score two or three and they concede two or three and it's an all-exciting qualifying campaign with lots of goals. But to lose 1-0 with that talent on the pitch to a team with a lot less names organised but more limited like Paraguay, again, maybe you look at the manager, or I don't know. I don't know what you think, Anne.
Yeah, well, yeah, I think that a lot of it probably to do with Bowser. He does seem to be possibly a bit out of his depth at the moment, and that kind of seems to be the opinion in Argentina. Although I'd like Daniel to come on tonight and maybe tell us more about that. But just by judging by my Twitter feed last night and today, that seemed to be kind of a popular opinion. I think, as well, it's a mentality issue. Not too dissimilar to how it is with England, maybe, as well. Players are maybe scared. They play with a bit of fear when they put that shirt on. They don't seem to have the same bounce about them. That's especially true for Aguero. And Higuain, again, missed an unbelievable chance. I don't know if you guys saw that. But pretty much an open goal, and you know, you just can't imagine him missing that chance in Italy, for example, for Napoli last season or Juventus this season. So yeah, it's I think it's a mix of things. mentality, and also for some of those players going from, say, a really high class coach in Europe to then maybe coming back to a lesser quality coach in Argentina, I think maybe they could be an issue there as well. I don't know, but they're not quite responding to that lower quality coach.
Have they been together too long as a unit, Adam, do you feel?
Yeah,
you
know, possibly, like, and that plays into the mentality aspect of it, yeah. I think something could be said for that. Hopefully we get one of the Argentine experts on next week, and maybe we can cover it a bit more with
it
them.
Would be interesting to see their opinion, too, on who they have, if they have anyone waiting in the wings, because they had a very hard time even finding somebody who would take the job. I mean, as much as you have Maradona saying that he would take the job for free, I think that would be a terrible idea to give it back to him.
Be hellishly entertaining.
Oh, man. That's a process. And it would give us so many fun things to talk about. But there are not a lot of people with the state of the Federation who were willing to take the job. So it'd be very interesting to see if they have anybody now. Dave, let's talk about Brazil. Dave, how do you say congratulations, but let's talk about that floodlight failure in Portuguese?
Oh, you put in the spot next to it.
That's the title of this particular feature.
Parabéns. Vamos falar sobre esta falta de energia.
Yes. Now let's talk about it.
Said with a beautiful Northern Irish twang.
Yeah, so this time of night, my Portuguese isn't great. I need some aids for my Portuguese, like alcohol and things like that.
you have my sympathy. My pronunciation in Spanish is probably my weakest point as well, so don't worry.
It comes to the territory. But hang on a minute. What about this Brazil team? You know, I've been on the case for nearly 2 years we've suffered Filipão, we've suffered Dunga again. And all of a sudden we have Cheech, and all of a sudden, you know, I spoke to you pre-pod about this. Even the mood of the country seems to have changed around the national team.
Although, you know, I'm sorry, but according to all of my BN Sports commentators, you have Tite, not Cheech. Tite, according to BN Sports.
This pronunciation is Cheech.
My favorite thing is listening to British commentary covering World Cup qualifying in Spanish.
Well, as I say, things have changed a bit here. And as I say, it's lovely because the whole time I've been here, I never really felt that the population really bought into the national team. Not certainly the way that historically I would have believed, but all of a sudden it's changing. As I said, you know, you saw the photographs and put them into the group. I was at a street party here pre-game yesterday. And, you know, the atmosphere was awesome. Everybody's happy. They've got something to shout about. There's something to believe in. We're in sort of a political crisis here. Well, we're always in a political crisis here. But something like this just raises the whole morale of the population and so on. And certainly what we're seeing on the pitch since Cheech has taken over has been a complete breath of fresh air. You know, we saw last night Felipe Luis was handed the armband, captaincy of the country, and went about it in the most professional manner. It didn't affect his game. He, you know, the weight of it didn't affect him. It didn't cause him moments of madness, which we've seen from other captains, to lose their head. And all around, that was the first thing to me was brilliant. You know, he's mixed experience and youth. Again, Gabi Jesus, you know, you talk about Aguero. Aguero's going to feel the breath of Gabi Jesus in the back of his neck at Manchester City come January. And the form that this kid's in, was it 4 goals and 2 assists in 4 games now for Brazil? And he really does look the part. 19 years old, looks the part. I believe he's going to fire Palmeiras to the Brazilian Championship as well. Hopefully, big Flamengo to that. Austin, there you go. I'm sure you're very happy. As I say, I was chatting to Austin last night, and you know, he's over the moon with Gabi Jesus. In the last 6 months, this kid has come on leaps and bounds. I talked on other pods about, you know, Marlos Moreno could be the bargain signing of. The past window, but Gabi Jesus could well be not far behind him because he to me is sort of first team ready.
Well, yeah, I remember us doing a pod. I think it was me, you, and Austin, and Roberto maybe as well, Roberto Rojas, and we had to name like the top three out of Gabi Gol, Gabriel Jesus, and Marlos Moreno, and like we put them in order. And at that point, it didn't seem like there was too much between the three of them.
But there is now.
But yeah, there's a huge gap now from Gabriel Jesus to the other two.
Yeah, and you put Gabriel Jesus in amongst great players. You know, you've got Coutinho and William buzzing around him there. And the service he's getting, and you sort of take that into the Premier League. It's like, oh shit, Aguero must be worried because he's not in the greatest form at the moment. It's only a couple of months away his arrival there, and depending on his transition to English football, this kid could be a sensation. Certainly, that he's handled the pressure of the national team, he's taken it in his stride, and I think that's the thing that I've found most impressive about everything that Cheech has done. He's found the one thing that Brazil have been lacking for since I've been here is a proper number nine. You know, we've lumbered through the Fred phase, we lumbered through the Joe phase, and I was like, oh Jesus, no more of this. And all of a sudden, you know, we have a number nine, and everybody assumed it was going to be Gabi Gall, and it's Gabi Jesus, and it is a breath of fresh air. And also, you know, we didn't have Neymar for this game. He was suspended. And it just showed, okay, yeah, look, Neymar is an absolutely excellent player. I do have my criticisms of him in a yellow shirt, which is well documented in these podcasts. But it just showed again, you know, Cheech has brought in Felipe Coutinho, one who's very close to my heart, and he has done an excellent job. He was a little more advanced in the absence of Neymar this time, and William came in, to fill the void of Neymar. Okay, they only scored it twice, but they looked the part. They just looked good. At the moment, the only question for Brazil at the minute for me is the defence hasn't really been tested and the goalkeeper isn't really being tested. Alisson had a couple of decent saves last night, but long term against really good opposition, this is why the game against Argentina for me is a major test. I do expect them to actually to come through it. I do expect them to beat them. But again, I do think that, you know, he brought back Thiago Silva, didn't use him at all during the break, which I thought was great because this Marquinhos Miranda partnership seems to be gelling quite nicely. But I don't feel that they've really been tested by anything decent since Cheech took over. So the Argentina game for me is a big test for Brazil. I think we can really start talking about whether Brazil are back again after this particular game. But certainly the signs are brilliant. As I say, the feeling in the country again is awesome. And it's just so lovely to have a team to get behind. And, you know, with the suspension of Neymar, Cheech has been very upfront, and he's been, you know, he's just come out and said basically, you know, Neymar needs to show more maturity for the national team, which is what I've been shouting about for a long, long time. And Dunga would never have done that. I think what you're going to see is a much more disciplined approach towards Neymar from Cheech. He seems like a man who doesn't take many prisoners. From the interviews that I've seen of him, he's very quietly spoken. He's the kind of boy you just don't think you want to cross. And hopefully that's the type of thing he's going to instill into this team going forward. But the signs are great. You know, they're top of the group now. And it wasn't so long ago I was on one of these podcasts and we were discussing the possibility of Brazil possibly not qualifying for the World Cup. And how unthinkable that was, and what a difference four games makes.
And you could have won all four of those games under Cheech.
Yeah, and you know, fair play to him. I wasn't necessarily on board the Cheech train at the beginning. You know, I didn't think what he did at Corinthians, you know, the style of football he was playing at Corinthians was what he would, I assumed that that's what he would have brought to the national team. Far from it. He has, you know, it's almost like Samba football again. They're trying to play football. They're trying to play expressive football, which is just great. And they do have the players to do it, and they can actually do it without Neymar as well. Whereas I think 6 months ago, everybody was just, is Neymar or nothing? And I think Brazilians have actually opened their eyes again and actually seen that there's more to their national team than just one man, which is a wonderful thing to say. And also the fact that this kid, Gabi Jesus, has come in and he's caught the imagination. How could he not? You know, it was a wonderful assist by the Venezuelan goalkeeper for the first goal, I must say. But the technique and the presence of mind that he had to actually chip the goalkeeper from there and the perfection of doing it was absolutely brilliant. And again, another decent goal from William as well. 3 points in the bag. They never looked, to be honest with you, never looked under threat against Venezuela. A couple of moments, but they had the game by the scruff of the neck. And that's something, again, we haven't really been seeing a lot of from Brazil. And, you know, they were up here. And maybe this is part of the change in my region of Brazil. You know, they played in Natal. last week against Bolivia. And I think it sort of caught the imagination of the people up here, and they're dying for the next game, and the fact that Selección were in town and so on. It's marvellous on every front for me. And as I say, I've been such a sceptic. And I'm sure Adam will have a go at me as well, because I've been so down in Brazil for all of these podcasts. It's actually a joy to be talking about Brazil in a sense of the traditional Brazilian teams again.
Dave, when Neymar comes back, do you think he will, and do you think he should get the captain's armband back?
I don't think he should come back, so he shouldn't get that. No, I don't. I think a period away from the captaincy for Neymar would be a very good thing in the team, because I think the first thing that Cheech really needs to get a grip of, and don't get me wrong, he's addressing it, is very clear, is that Neymar is not the team anymore, and he will have a role as opposed to being the team. And under Dunga, he was the team. I sat in Recife in March and I watched him, coming to nearly the D on his own penalty area to get the ball. And he had no real, he had basically not even a free roll. He could just do whatever he wanted. And it was clear that that was the difference. I think Cheech is very much trying to get him in that Barcelona role. He has a role. He has a purpose. I think he's going to be strict with it. And I think that'll bring a difference to Neymar. But again, if he doesn't turn up and he's injured or whatever, Brazil seem to be able to have the players to survive. You've still got Douglas Costa to come back as well. He's an exceptional talent. There's still a few of them out here. And not so long back, we were going, where are the next crop of Brazilians? Well, they're here. They've actually arrived. And it's just great to see. And I must tell you a story about my street party as well. As I say, living in South America, you guys all appreciate this one. We had the Northern Ireland Germany game, and I was at the party, and I just about had Wi-Fi on my phone from the house just where I was, and a terrible, awful stream that kept stopping. And I was kind of celebrating that Northern Ireland were only losing 2-0 against Germany. And the Brazilians just couldn't understand that I was kind of happy about this. So I just sort of turned around and said, well, it could have been worse. Could have been 7-1, couldn't it? And talk about the party coming to a standstill. They don't like being reminded of it. But as I say, a country of 200 million against, in Brazil, a country of 1 million in Northern Ireland, we'll take a 2-0 against Germany whenever Brazil are getting beaten 7-1.
And that's when Maracanã becomes a verb. All right. So next time, Adam and Simon are going to fight. We are, politely though, Dave, we're going to get an Argentinian on here for you, and you guys can have a takedown. And I will just rejoice in the fact that hopefully none of my men will get suspended and everybody will behave and will score lots of beautiful goals, because today I'm an optimist. So the question of the night, before I ask you all, Adam, I'm remembering now where we can find you on Twitter, is a prediction. Can I do that? I'm going to make you predict. Here we go. Adam, your prediction, and then I'm going to make Simon co-predict. How are you going to do against Colombia?
Well, I think Chile will probably lose that one, but I'd like to predict maybe nearer the time. It's still a month away, and there's plenty of pods to come before that. We've got plenty of South American club football to discuss before.
Oh, Adam. So,
I'll make my prediction nearer the time. But if I had to say now, then I'd probably
do.
Colombia probably could win about 2-1, 3-1, something like that.
All right, Simon.
I'll take that. No. I think the game should kind of play into... It should be a good game. It's normally quite an attacking game between Colombia and Chile. I think it may play somewhat into Chile's hands if Colombia set up to play as they did against Uruguay, with Chile breaking on the counter. I think they could get some joy there. But like I say, we'll have to see who's injured, who's available. But I think Colombia could get a win. I'm quite confident. I think let's say 3-1. I'll take the 3-1. Adam's put it on offer. I'll take it. 3-1 to Colombia.
All right, Dave. Brazil, Argentina. What are you saying?
I say Brazil are going to sneak it. It's going to be very tight, 1-0 or 2-1. If I had to put money on it, I would say 2-1. I just think Cheech has them playing at the minute. I think the difference is that the crowds are back on the side of the national team, and I think that that'll be what gets them over the line. It's sort of the 12th man. The 12th man here is back. There's a passion about football again. It's awesome. I love it.
I think you're the 12th man right now. I like it. Okay.
And Uruguay, Venezuela?
Venezuela? No, we've got Ecuador.
Oh, yeah, Ecuador. Yeah, sorry. Yeah.
And sure, because of that, I'm still going to be optimistic, and I'm going to go 2-1. I'm going to go 2-1, and I'm going to say that we're going to win, and it's going to be really hard, and I will probably have to have at least one drink. That's my prediction for the game. And Adam Brandon, where can we find you on Twitter?
You can find me at Kanija Scores on Twitter.
Ugh.
There you go. Do you think that perhaps these migraines that you quite often have on these pods after Uruguay games are connected to your drinking during that?
Good point, Adam.
No, it was a caffeine withdrawal today, but I didn't think about it. Thank you. Thank you, Adam. Dave, where can we find you on Twitter?
I'm never on Twitter anymore.
I know you're not. Where can we find you?
At DaveRN66.
And we can find you guys on all podcasts all the time. Simon, where can we find you?
Twitter at Simon Edwards SAF.
Okay, so you can also find all of you on all of our World Football Index podcasts, which I just found out you can either download or stream. And I also found out there's a difference between those things. So download or stream all the podcasts all the time and tell us what you think. And we will see you next time when we talk about all things South America. Yay.